Welcome into another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. It's a Monday morning. It's football and random things here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. Hi, Jeff Woody.
Not a fun day. Not a fun day from the football and random things. If we did a Bart podcast, it'd be happy and fun right now. But this is a fart podcast, which is not happy and fun.
Yes, basketball was very happy and fun yesterday.
Thanks
to Al Jaskoos, who went 5 for 5 from 3-point range, 7th Cyclone in history.
I would, if anybody hasn't listened to Quarter 3, where you and Scott are just talking basketball, that is like you at in your most element and Scott in his most element. Like, that is high quality podcasting. If you haven't listened to it yet, dear Cyclone listener, go back and listen to the previous ones. It's awesome.
I appreciate that, man. As much fun as I have talking football with you, I mean, you know that basketball is where I thrive as far as like my actual knowledge of the game, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's always fun to get to do that with Scott. All right. But it, like you mentioned, it is a football and random things podcast. I don't even know that I was mad after Iowa State's 28-21 loss to Oklahoma on Saturday. You know, it's cliche to say I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. But like, I think as much as anything, that's what I was. I was just bummed. It was another reminder of what this year is going to be as far as being a what if. You know, just a handful of things go differently. Iowa State probably wins the game in Norman. But, you know, they didn't go Iowa State's way. And that's just what's – you just kind of walk away from it and you're like, well, shit. I guess it is what it is.
Yeah. I think the emotion, I saw this quote from Charlie, and I don't know if everybody's read it or saw it or have seen it or whatever, but, this was an interview, and I don't even know where it was from, but
sure, I think it was just from the post game press conferences. Yeah.
So Charlie says, losing sucks. We keep coming up short. It's just frustrating. I'm not upset at anyone. I feel like this team fights with every ounce of their body. Can't dig holes. Can't get down 14 points with 8 minutes to play. As my career is dwindling down as a Cyclone, even times like this, you've got to be grateful for people around you, because people misunderstand sometimes when coach talks about process, that it doesn't mean losses don't hurt any less. So many of us give so much of our lives year round, and especially in season, to this team. When we come up short like this, it hurts. Trying through my faith and through our team to be grateful for what we have. But yeah, it hurts. There's no frustration between each other. It's just, we're competitors and we lost twice in a row on either the last play of the game or one of the last plays of the game. We never die easy, but we find some crazy ways to lose sometimes. As the season ends, just trying to find ways to lay the foundation for the young guys, because this program is a bright future. Obviously I'm disappointed with the way my and our senior season has gone, but I don't really have any answers. I think that is about as well as you could possibly sum up most people's emotion to it. Is you're mad that you lost, or disappointed that you lost. You're not really mad at anyone. It's just because like all of the losses that they've had have been such, I don't know, crazy circumstances to cause a loss. I don't know. It's just tough.
Yeah. And you know, this game on Saturday, I felt the entire first half felt so chaotic. And when it had that chaotic vibe, I thought that really did not play into Iowa State's hands at all. And it was like, they've got to get this, you know, I texted you. I don't know that I've seen a Matt Campbell team need halftime more than what that team did, you know, like everybody just needed to go to the locker room and calm the F down for like 10 minutes and just relax. Cause it just seemed like everybody was pressing. You know,
well, and I think especially the offensive line, I think that was the biggest, and it's not even necessarily, you know, the offensive line didn't play exceptionally well. But physically they didn't play exceptionally poorly. Like if they were on a person, if they had got to where they were supposed to be, they blocked them well. It wasn't physically, they couldn't handle Oklahoma. It was that the blitzes and pressures and stuff, the different looks that they were giving confused the hell out of the offensive line. And I mean, they got corrected towards the end of the game, obviously, because there was touchdown drives, but at the same time, like most of the game you felt, that the game was going faster for them in their heads than it actually was on the field.
That was the I think the poorest performance I've seen from an Iowa State offensive line in several years, probably. I mean, where they were just where they were just purely owned by another group for the majority of a game, you know?
Well, they were mentally outmaneuvered,
yeah.
Which is weird because Colin Newell, I think Jay has talked about it a fair amount. Colin Newell is a mental center. He is not a physical center. Where physical center, like Linderbaum, every center is going to be compared to Tyler Linderbaum because he's really good. Linderbaum is both, but he's more physically the guy than he is mentally the guy. He's a sharp dude. But like the thing is once he gets, you're not going to knock him off course. And he's also going to get people in place. Like that's the kind of thing that he does and the kind of element that he brings to the Iowa offensive line is being able to like physically move people. Very rarely do you get a center that does both, which is why Linderbaum's so highly regarded, because usually either you're a guy that thinks really well or a guy that moves really well, and very rarely is it both. And so Newell is a guy that thinks really well. He's usually getting everybody in the right position, and go back and listen to whatever fart we talked about what the center's job is. But his job, what he's really usually good at is saying, hey, we're going to set the blocking scheme off this guy. The zone blocking scheme is going over here. You're taking this guy. The blitz is coming off the right side. So, hey, our tight end needs to go out. Like he's usually good at coordinating everything, and he wasn't, which is weird. And I don't know if it was necessarily him, but the offensive line was completely out of sorts as far as picking up the pressures that Alex Grinch was throwing.
Yeah, and that's where you got to tip your cap to Alex Grinch and what that, you know, defensive front seven was able to do. Like at the end of the day, man, like Nick Benito, Perrion Winfrey, like those, what's his name? Isaiah Thomas. Like those are damn good players, man. Like those guys are all really good. They're all going to play in the NFL. And, you know, you could just tell that they had a very good schematic plan, you know, and they were able to do some things that gave Iowa State some serious trouble, because I don't know that I've watched an Iowa State game where more blitzers and rushers were just free running to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And that's where you felt really bad for Brock, because then Brock all of a sudden is running for his life and he's starting to do some things that you're just like, okay, this is going very poorly. You know, mm-hmm. Brock's getting his ass kicked back there. And that was frustrating because you just sit there watching it and you're like, man, what the hell is going on? And why are these people just running straight through the middle of the line completely untouched?
Well, I think that's a familiarity breeds contempt situation. I mean, also familiarity breeds contempt. That was chippy.
That was a contentious football game. And I want to say this too. I think if those two teams played 100 times, they each win 50.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's very evenly matched football teams.
That's kind of how it's been for the last 5 years now. You know, I think Oklahoma's won what, 4 out of the 6 or 3 out of the 6?
4 out of the 6.
Either way. But either way, every one of them's come down 19, to the very last 19. Possession.
Yeah, 4 out of the 6.
So every one of them's come out the very last possession, which is just some freak thing. It happens. But the thing that's frustrating about the Alex Grinch being able to generate pressure by confusing the offensive line, or confusing whether it's Brock or whether it's Newell or whether it's just individual guys in the offensive line that need to know what they're doing. I don't know, but they have, in the same way that Iowa State's defense watches enough film and has enough experience. Caleb Williams, that was exactly what I thought how Iowa State was going to play Caleb Williams. Now, granted, you don't want to give up a 75-yard touchdown run. True. But I mean, the kid's going to make a play. He's an athlete, but in the same way, outside of that play, I would say he played a poor game. Like that was not a good Oklahoma offensive performance, because they know that Caleb Williams doesn't read defense as well. Like the interception that I think McDonald was the one that ended up getting the interception that was tipped by Hummel. Uh-huh. That's a terrible read. I mean, Joel Klatt, one of my favorites, we talked about it before. Joel Klatt, one of my favorite color guys, actually, I mean, very, very succinctly described it. He was like, that read is very easy. And when you look, there's a middle open. So there's the middle defender, and you throw to the opposite side of the middle defender. You don't try and force a ball to where that defender's going. Well, Caleb Williams at this point doesn't feel comfortable reading defenses. So he had what, like 90 passing yards on the entire game.
Yeah.
And outside of that one big,
Caleb Williams line for the day, 8 of 18 for 87 yards, one touchdown and one interception.
Yeah. And outside of that one 75 yard run, didn't really run all that effectively either. Like outside of that one play, which again, you can't take plays out and just say like, oh, this didn't happen. But outside of that one play, he played pretty poorly. And so that's exactly the scheme. But back to the original point is John Haycock knows Oklahoma and what Oklahoma wants to do on offense. And Alex Grinch now knows Iowa State and what Iowa State wants to do on offense. And so you play each other enough times in enough stakes games. It's just like next week when Oklahoma and Oklahoma State play, it's going to be a completely different game than most teams against the opponent are going to be playing because they know each other so well. And the stakes are so high that you invest a lot of mental energy in being like, what does Oklahoma's defense do that we really don't like that we can tweak into to adjust that thing. So like they're on the table as a team that you adjust your scheme around because you're so familiar with what they do. So yeah, I mean, Alex Grinch and John Haycock obviously called really good defensive games. They just did. And that's not super surprising from how familiar each team is with the other and how with each other, excuse me, and how good those guys are at calling defenses.
Right. And it just is, I don't know. Let's talk about the offensive play calling in the first half. It felt like a air of desperation at times. And it was one of those things where you could tell that they knew they had nothing to lose, which obviously they don't. Like they're going in there. Oklahoma's 10-1. It's like, man, we've got nothing to lose at this point. We might as well throw all our cards on the table, you know? But there were points where it's like, they were trying to do some really odd things. It felt like with getting too cute that I'm interested to know what you think of the, you know, I think one of the best examples is what was it the third down when they tried to run a toss to Breece and then he was going to throw it back to Brock on the other side. Mm-hmm. And then there was the one where they, apparently ran the play wrong where Hunter Deckers came in and he handed it off to, or he tossed it to Jalen Noel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Noel threw it back to him for like a 6-yard gain that ended up not working. I mean, it got negated anyway, mm-hmm. because of the penalty, but it was like, those kinds of things were the ones where I was like, okay, I get wanting to open up the playbook. I get wanting to do these things, but you're in like a 2-minute drill trying to go get a field goal to take the lead against Oklahoma into the halftime, which I don't know when Iowa State would have ever had a lead against Oklahoma at halftime. And, you know, like I told you that they had the lead in the first quarter for the first time since 2015. I can't even imagine when the last time they had a lead at halftime was. And yeah. And you pull out a play like that at that time, and it's just kind of like, why, you know, that's yeah. what I was thinking.
I would imagine that comes at least a little bit from frustration, but they probably also had, I mean, when
they ran
worked,
like six, what I was
like, oh, it's a great play.
They ran like six trick plays.
Yeah.
In the game.
True. And again, and they, sometimes they were like that fake punt. If you run the fake punt, and the fake punt works, you're like, man, what a great play call in that situation. And then and if a play doesn't work, you're like, that's a desperate play. So it's one of those things that like a hindsight's 20/20. But I do think that calling that volume of plays is, yeah, just sort of like, yeah, what the hell do we got to lose? I think they probably did those a little bit more out of frustration because they wanted, like the Breece throw thing, I actually don't dislike that call at all because the amount of eyeballs and the amount of focus that Breece brings when he catches that, when he catches a toss and you have, you know, 11 dudes that are trying to run to him because he deservedly brings all that attention. If you have 11 guys running to you, you have no one covering anybody else. So you would assume based on that, that they're going to leave somebody else. They're going to leave somebody uncovered. But the penetration was the problem. And the penetration has been the problem the whole day is that you get someone as a run through and Breece doesn't have time to even, I mean, he's not Brock Purdy. He's not going to be comfortable standing under pressure and delivering a throw. You need, as a guy who's not done that before, as it or doesn't ever frequently do that, you need to be able to just go, all right, clean open pocket, like the Xavier Hutchinson touchdown throw to Tariq Milton. Like you need to have a completely open space that you can throw it something to, And if you didn't have a run through, maybe that happens, but you did have a run through. So it didn't happen. And then the one of, I do think that they were trying to get a home run shot when they brought in Deckers for that reverse thing. And I'm guessing, and you know, Klatt mentioned that it was a failure of the coaching staff to communicate to Deckers that you can't pass it, which is probably true. But at the same time, kid just walked in front of 80,000 people in Norman, Oklahoma on national television at big noon. You think his mind shorted a little bit?
Probably.
I'm going to guess that's probably what happened. Like they, you can't have every coach is going to understand the double forward pass that you can't do that. So they probably said, and probably like right even before he went out there, he's like, hey man, got to hand it, can't throw it. And he gets out there and you go, oh God. Like you ever had that, the trope of the dream where you walk on stage and you're in your underwear, like that kind of thing. Like it, basically what it feels like the first time you go in front of this huge crowd in this big moment, you go, oh God, and your brain just stops. So I mean, stuff like that, I think it was a little more desperate than you probably needed, but I don't hate it. I just hate the outcome. I think the biggest thing above all of it was they couldn't find a way to consistently block and stop run throughs. And because of that, they tried more stuff than they probably should have to get around it, and they couldn't get around it. So just, it was the penetration, the run throughs. That was the story of the game. And even penetration and run throughs when they didn't happen, when Brock overthrew Chase at the very end of the game, which was probably the saddest play of the season, I think, like it happened and your heart just sinks. But when that happened and Brock floated in the pocket to his right when he didn't need to, and he threw it off his back foot when he didn't need to. And like, I'm sure when you go back and watch that film in isolation, he's going to be really disappointed and frustrated with himself because he floated off of his spot in the pocket for no real good reason. But there was a push, somebody, it was a guard or a tackle on the left side. It might even been Newell, I don't know, but there was some pressure just off of his left side as he's looking at the defense. And a guy pushes him back. And because of all the pressure that he'd felt, he felt like he needed to give himself space. If he stands there in the pocket, the guy who he was trying to throw over, like I think it was number 11, the defensive or the linebacker, I think the number 11, either way, the linebacker that he had to throw over, which made that throw high. If he stays in the pocket right where he was, that guy's not, he's nowhere near where that play is. So he can just drive that ball at 100 miles an hour to Chase, who can do whatever with it, whether it's the same thing he did on his touchdown, or you're dragging people, or you just catch it, you drag a safety for 3 yards, you get a first down, you keep moving. But you're able to do that if he doesn't move off the spot. But the only reason he moves off the spot in the first place is because he got hit so many times and so hard that he didn't have faith that if he were to stay there, he wasn't going to get hit. So he was starting to jump at ghosts a little bit because of how frequently he was getting hit. So that was the story of the whole game, is the penetration that Oklahoma got to just throw a wrench into whatever Iowa State was trying to do.
I'll give Hunter credit for one thing on that play. That was a great catch.
Between two defenders. That was a rebound, man.
Yeah, that was a rebound. I tweeted that out. I was like, man, Hunter looked like he was going to get a rebound for the West Sioux Falcons or something like that. Like, that's, gosh, man. You know, and I watched
Hunter play. Great box out.
I watched Hunter play at the state basketball tournament when he was in high school, and that looked exactly like what he was doing down at Wells Fargo Arena. So it was.
You guys get established on the block. Your guard wants to get it into you. That's what that was.
Yeah, Hunter was a great basketball player. You could see it not on that one play, but I mean, that play, the last play was you're right. It was very disappointing because I think that you could see when they lined up for the play, if you know their offense very well, you could look at it and look at the formation and see, okay, Chase has really nobody lined up over the top of him. They're going to have him basically chip if someone is coming, and then he's going to slip out and run a drag and be wide open. And he was. And that's why I think I was so bummed, was like, man, with a good throw, that's a touchdown. Even with just like an okay throw, it's probably a touchdown, you know? And, or like you said, at minimum, it's a first down and you keep playing. But that stunk, man, because Brock had done a lot to come back into the game after getting his ass kicked and then, you know, taking a helmet to helmet hit on that fourth and two, when they tried to run the read, and, you know, fourth to end that way was a real disappointment. But man, for that final drive, no one deserves a bigger shout out for that final drive than number 88.
Man,
if you are a Mackey voter, if you are a Mackey voter and you were watching that football game, I don't know how you walk away and say, I'm not going to vote for Charlie Kohler.
That had to have been maybe not his best game, because he's had some pretty damn good games, but that's got to be up there. And
It's his best game. 12. What was his final line? 12 catches for 152 yards
and a touchdown.
And a touchdown. Yeah. Has 3 touchdown catches in the last 2 weeks.
But like the understanding that everybody on the field knows that 88's getting the ball against a top 10 team, whether or not they're top 10 now, or they will be on Tuesday, they're top 10 team. And you go and do that. And I mean, the coaches know, the players know, the safeties know, the linebackers know, the defensive linemen know, is find 88 and make sure that you can double cover him. Now, granted, they just forgot once, which completely inexplicable blown coverage when they just, I think the one where he got like 30 yards or something like that, when they blew that one, that was, I had no idea how that happened.
Was that the fourth down when he ran the hitch?
Yeah.
And that one was weird too, because they had two people lined up over the top of him on the formation. So like you look at it as they line up and you're like, okay. And they'd called timeout to make sure that they said, we're going to double cover 88. And you looked at it and you're like, by the time he caught the ball, there's no one within 10 yards of him. You're like,
how did that happen?
Where'd those guys go? You know, Where'd the two people who were lined up over the top of the one guy that you needed to make sure and cover, where did both of them go? And that's like Oklahoma football in a nutshell right there, is like, where did those guys go?
Yeah. But I think he is finally fully healthy and has been for the past 2 or 3 weeks. And this is the Charlie that you would have seen in the beginning part of the year, but he got a high ankle sprain. And for those that have never had a high ankle sprain, so that was, I had that my senior year of, or my junior year of football. And I was out for the entire, I wrestled up until that year. I got a high ankle sprain the last regular season football game in, I think, October or November. And I was out for the entire wrestling season, just because that injury takes so long to come back from, because it's so uncomfortable. It took 2.5 months for him to finally be at this level. And to have that, again, another thing that's just disappointing, is to have that performance come in a loss. You know, I mean, that is the great, that's the fairy tale story of kid goes back to Norman, balls out, makes a comeback, leads the team to a comeback win, but it's just that much short. So I don't know. It that was as good as he's played. I thought, honestly, Breece had one of his best pass catching games. I mean, again, you don't, I think Klatt said it again, that he's like, this dude's going to be a first round pick. I don't know if he's going to be a first round pick, just because running backs generally don't get picked in the first round, unless a team is really desperate for a running back, in which case maybe. But the ability that he has in every facet of the game was on display on Saturday. I mean, granted, he got the record tying touchdown and the very first drive, which was awesome. After that, Joe Scales Skates. Catches that pass.
Joe Skates emerges from whatever doghouse he's been in for the last month to come in and catch two balls on the first possession. And they threw it to him once, and I was like, what the hell? I was like, Joe Skates is back now.
They let Joe Skates out of his, he's able to do this again.
Joe Skates was in witness protection for the last month, and then shows up to make two big catches on the first drive against Oklahoma.
Yeah. But yeah, Breece was as good as he's been in the past game. But again, penetration is the dagger for all of it. It doesn't matter how good your skill guys are. It doesn't matter how on your quarterback might be or how on your running back might be. If you have run throughs, the rhythm, timing, and positioning of every play gets completely thrown out the window.
For sure. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back, talk more about this game on Football and Random Things on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. Welcome back into Football and Random Things here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. All right, we talked a lot about the offense, talked a little bit about the defense. I do want to say one thing about that defense, man. Iowa State has some absolute freaking dogs on in the young from in their young players in the secondary, man.
Oh yeah.
Like those guys are going to be very, very good in the future.
I text you this next year. I mean, they might have their safeties might even be a step up from what they have this year, next year, because you're going to have Isheen back probably. Mm-hmm. Isheen, Bo Freiler, and then is it Craig McDonald?
Yeah, Craig McDonald. Yeah,
you're going to have but McDonald, Freiler, and Young. I mean, those are three dudes that'll absolutely take your head off, and they can cover. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a really dirty safety group. And then the Purchase kid, the corner. Just came out of nowhere. I mean, he's Miles probably Purchase, a freshman.
Yeah, he's played a little bit in a handful of games, but this was by far his most extensive run that he's gotten all year.
Yeah, and so he played pretty well. Because yeah. You're going to lose Anthony Johnson and Datron Young, so you're going to be at least replacing two corners. I mean, mm-hmm. depending on whoever, but like they have all those guys. Gary Vaughn got the start because I don't know if something is wrong with the Ryan Vance. I didn't see him play. But you have Gary Vaughn getting the start. You have Horn that's actually coming in and playing a pretty substantial amount. You've got a lot of young defensive linemen that are coming in. I mean, Zach Peterson might be the cornerstone of the defensive line next year, along with guys like Isaiah Lee or J.R. Singleton. And you got a lot of talent that's coming back. Like this,
Blake Peterson played quite a bit. He's all of a sudden got his way Tucker into the rotation. Yeah, Tucker Robertson's, I think, a fifth-year senior, so I don't know if he'll be back, but yeah.
Yeah. But either way, you have guys that are not your number one kind of top tier guys that played really well on Saturday. Also your top tier guys played really well. I mean, the Mike Rose effect, there are so many times when Kennedy Brooks, cause they would run and that Oklahoma has run that forever, is that kind of slow quarterback read. It's sort of like a Kansas State play where the running back is trying to more or less stay behind the center or the guard, like the front side guard, at matching whatever pace they're going to. And then if they get a corner, he's going to pop out the front side. But if not, he's going to essentially try and build the linebacker up into that pile and cut behind it. They've run it for 30 years. They're going to keep running it as long as Lincoln Riley's there. But so many of those plays, it looks like, he makes one cut and then assume that he's going to be gone or assume that he's going to be one-on-one with a safety. And all of a sudden 23 comes out of nowhere, front side or backside, and just makes a tackle 6 yards in, and then it's second and four. And instead of being, a 15, 20 yard gain, it's second and four. So the Mike Rose effect is real. And the first time that you almost don't want a sack to be a strip sack was the Will McDonald sack.
In the end zone. Yeah.
Just, man, that close.
And I fail to understand the, can you advance the ball or can you not advance the ball on these fumbles? Like the one with when Caleb Williams took the ball from Kennedy Brooks against Kansas, like ever since then, I don't understand. I don't know how that rule works anymore.
I think it's only on fourth down, and somebody's probably got a better understanding of the rule, but I think it's only on fourth down where you can't advance a fumble. But even then, how does like the last play of the game, like throw it backwards situation work? If it's lateral, I don't know. I don't understand the advanced thing, but either way, Will McDonald doing Will McDonald things. I mean, the defense, it's exactly what you expected from the defense. That was to a T what I was thinking was going to happen against the Oklahoma offense.
For sure. I do think we need to say too, Hunter Deckers came in after, so they brought him in the first time when Brock first went to the locker room, that first drive, and obviously threw an interception where they tried to throw it down the field back-to-back times right off the bat.
Again, on stage with your underpants, same feeling.
Yeah, and he's running away from his throwing side, back across his body, tries to chuck one down the field. Just eat it, young fella. Just eat it.
Don't throw that one. Throw that one into the ninth row of the stands.
Yeah. And I'm sure that Hunter knows, he probably knew that the second he threw it, I shouldn't have done that. I can just imagine that's what's in his mind is the second he did it, I should not have done that. And you know, it is what it is. That's a young guy having to, you know, trying to make a play, and it just doesn't work out for you. And at the end of the day, it didn't really, I don't think it really made that big of a difference. I think they forced him to punt and got the ball right back. But the drive that he led then at the beginning of the fourth quarter was, I mean, that was really good. You know, he looked really good on that drive, and they were able to get down the field and score a touchdown. And it was like, that was the thing where you're like, okay, that's what, when you hear how much he has progressed, that's what it looks like. Like, I think Hunter is going to be really good for Iowa State once he is the starting quarterback. It just,
I think
like,
so too.
He's come in some weird situations when he's had to come in and make plays, been under some weird pressure.
And I think the offense, and you know, you can't talk about Hunter Deckers and not talk about next year. And we're going to spend at least a little bit of time going, kind of previewing this final senior day TCU game, but you can't talk about Hunter Deckers and not talk about next year. And next year, the offense is going to look substantially different than it does this year. Cause as Matt Campbell has shown, out of necessity, they created the defense that is sweeping the country. They said, we don't have four defensive linemen, or a rotation of two sets of four defensive linemen that we can trust to have depth. So we can do 3 and 3-5 because Ray Lima can stick in the middle and we got guys on the end and whatever. So out of necessity, they got the best 11 on the field, and they did what those 11 can do. Brock Purdy's style of offense and Breece Hall's style of running is run the ball. You can have quick underneath drag routes, very accurate, read what's going on, making good decisions, and let him be competitive. And when in doubt, make a decision. He doesn't really have the best deep ball. In fact, I would say his deep ball throwing is subpar relative to other quarterbacks that are kind of at the level that he's at. Hunter Deckers is a phenomenal deep ball thrower, and that dude has a cannon. You're also losing Charlie. You're also losing Chase. Jared Russ is going to, I think, is able to come back. I don't know if he is or wouldn't, but you might have a fullback come back, but you're going to lose a lot of your big physical guys, and you're going to lose Breece Hall. You're going to replace them with Deion Silas and Eli Sanders and Jairoel Brock is going to be back potentially. And so you have a very different offense with what you had this year. And Hunter Deckers, as soon as he came in, I think I text you when we were texting back and forth, Hunter Deckers, your completion percentage is going to go down substantially, and your yards per attempt is going to go up substantially, because the offense, when he's in, and when they go to tailor it, like, to him as the season, like the off season progresses, it's going to be a lot more down the field. It is going to be a lot more deep shots. It's going to be a lot more deep posts. I mean, stuff, because the kid can freaking sling it. He's not as mature and not yet as Brock is, as far as reading coverages and stuff. So you're going to probably get more incompletions. You're going to get more interceptions, but you're also going to get a lot more 70 yard touchdowns. So it's going to be a lot different of an offense next year. And I think guys like Sanders and Silas are comfortable more in spread than they are. Like, Breece is a downhill kind of, you know, patient Le'Veon Bell punisher of a running back. Mm-hmm. I think this offense is going to be a lot more open next year, just because the personality and the personnel of this group is going to be much more down the field. They can do more of that. So it was funny. I think as he was standing on the sideline, I sent you that text, and then the first pass that he throws is a 65 yard interception. Like, all right, well, yards per attempt high, completion percentage low. Check, check.
Yeah. And he made a throw to X, attempted a throw to X on a fade route towards the front corner of the end zone, where, I mean,
it was a great ball.
Yeah.
Great ball.
It was going to be a tough play to make because the defender was right there with him, but it was like, if you're going to throw that ball, the only place you can throw it is right where he threw it, you know?
If you could practice that, I mean, that's the Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams. That's mm-hmm. that throw is understanding when I have a communication, a connection with my wide receiver, that if that dude is, cause that he was in an even position, he wasn't necessarily, you didn't stack him. Cause if you're throwing a deep ball, a stack position is when, if I'm number 80, he's dead in between the 8 and the 0 on my back. Like, he is dead behind me and I've stacked him. That's a great position for a quarterback to throw a deep ball. And if that's the case, you are leading him down the field because the defender can only pass interfere at that point. Well, if he's even with you, the best thing to do, if you're side to side, if you're number 8-0, he can see neither my 8 or my 0. He's on my shoulder. If that's the position that he's in, the best way to throw it is a back shoulder fade, because that guy has to stop at the same time that you stop, but you know you're stopping and he doesn't. And so that's what Rodgers and Adams do so well and have done for so many years, is Adams knows the position that he's in against his corner, and Rodgers knows the position that he's in, and they just communicate on that fact. So it might be a deep ball that they throw a back shoulder, and it's not necessarily planned. It's just where the position of the guy is. So Hunter Deckers, if X knew that that was the throw that was going to come out, he would approach it. He would have approached it differently, but he didn't know that Deckers was going to throw it there, because Brock usually doesn't throw that ball there. He's usually going to throw it up and away, and he's going to let, you know, the catches that Charlie and X are going to do are going to be that turnaround, catch it at its high point, drag a toe and call it, you know, that's the same thing. Hakeem would do that all the time. He's going to throw up and away, versus the back shoulder is much more at, again, it's at shoulder height. And so he wasn't expecting that ball to be in that place at that time. If you were to run that play, that exact play right afterwards, X would probably give him nod back and be like, I got you. I know what you mean. I know what you're trying to do. And they complete that right there. It's like, it's a great ball. X just wasn't expecting that, because that's not what Brock likes to do. So dude, if he can throw that, if you can have a guy like, whether it's Skates or Easy Anderson, or I think Jalen Noel is going to be an absolute star by the time he's done. If you can have guys like that, that are able to get down the field, D backs and a quarterback who can throw it, D backs are going to have, they can't be in a trail position, which if you're in a trail position, you can't throw a back shoulder because, well, I mean, you could as a pass interference, but it's a much easier chance for the defender to get in the way. So if they're going to have to play even, because that's the only way that you can actually contend against a deep ball, and I can throw a back shoulder consistently, if I can throw a deep ball and a back shoulder consistently, that is the quarterback equivalent of the Dwight Freeney spin move, is that I've got a spin and I've got to counter off that spin, because you have to play so high or so low to prevent your spin move, that I can just have a counter punch on every one of it, and you can't stop either one. So if that ball is able to be replicated by Hunter Deckers down the road, that's a really different weapon that this offense has not had really since the few times when Jacob Park was on, you know, the few games where he was locked in was the last quarterback that's been able to throw that ball, or to be able to even have the chance to throw that ball. But the problem is Jacob Park was kind of a jackass.
Yeah.
Versus Deckers is not.
Yeah. And I don't know if Hunter's going to, you know, if Hunter will pick up the mental side to what he needs to, but that's a kid with like NFL type arm talent. I know that there aren't many left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL, so that will probably hurt him a little bit as far as his NFL prospects, but it's like, he has that kind of just pure arm talent, and you can see it already when he comes in and makes some of these throws, because you're like, man, you can just tell that he's playing on pure instinct right now. You know, he's not out there seeing it really that well. He's just like out there playing and just playing ball.
He's just street balling. It's like Caleb Williams. He's playing Caleb Williams ball. It's just like that catch that Brees had, that one-handed fall away fourth down catch, which was absolutely incredible. That's the only place that ball can maybe even go. And it's just literally just the flick of the wrist over top of it in a pure chaotic situation where he's scrambling to his left, the play's falling apart. Brees probably wasn't even supposed to be a receiver. He was supposed to be blocking there, but he noticed that Brock was, Hunter was scrambling. And so he had to be like, all right, I've got to go do something. And so then that just chaos happened. If he can figure out how to read stuff, the quarterback position, I don't want to say it's going to improve, because it is really hard to think of how an offense will function better without Brock Purdy than with Brock Purdy. So I'm not going to say improve, because I think it is somehow, and I think Chris said this on one of the Williams and Bloom podcasts, it's possible for Brock Purdy to own basically every quarterback record at Iowa State and still be underrated. Like, I think that is absolutely true, but he's going to be able to do it a lot different than Brock, and a lot physically better than Brock did it, by putting the ball where it needs to go on the right time and down the field, whatever. If that kid can figure out how to read 60% as well as Brock Purdy read stuff, this is a completely different, completely more explosive offense. So it's going to be, I think that's an interesting thing going into next year about how, what Iowa State's going to come out looking like, because maybe the Hanukkah kid, Hanika, I probably should figure out how to pronounce that.
Deshaun Hanika.
He'll probably, and then Easton Dean and Jared Russ, like you still have three tight ends that are going to be good players. I don't know if they're going to, Chase Allen is such a dominant blocker. I don't think that you have a guy in there that's a Chase Allen. So you might not be able to run such heavy 12 personnel as you did before, but you might still try and do that formationally. And Deckers is like 235 pounds. So you can still, you might still run it tight, but they're going to approach it and they're going to be able to take way more deep shots than they did before. So that is an interesting aspect. And we'll get plenty into this in the offseason about what the offense is going to look like when you replace Brees and you replace Brock and you get rid of the two tight ends that have been there for 15 years, what that offense looks like.
For sure. I figure next week we can do a lot of like, you know, the season in retrospect type of stuff. And maybe we could get Jay Jordan to come on and do a podcast with us and like really go like through the entire season. What do you think of that?
Sure.
Okay.
Jay's, I mean, you wouldn't have to do anything. You just want to get Jay on here so me and Jay can talk for 2.5 hours and you can just sit there.
Yeah. Usually it makes my Monday mornings a lot easier when Jay Jordan's here too. I don't have to talk very much. Yeah.
Fine. No, I'd love to talk to Jay.
Okay. Well, I will try and set that up for us next week. But let's talk about these seniors. One last time at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday, 3:30 kick against TCU. Man, this is going to be like when George had his senior day, you know, or when Monte and Naz and Matt Thomas had their senior day. This is going to be it should be a fun day. I think Iowa State should still win the football game, probably. TCU is, you know, an improved team has shown flashes of being pretty good. But
their defense is awful.
Yeah. It's going to be a sad day to say goodbye to these guys, though, you know.
And it's also going to be weird because this is also outside of Allen, Hakeem, and David, there haven't been many true NFL prospects that have a legitimate shot at playing. If I'm Brees Hall, if I'm Charlie Kolar, this is my last game that I play, regardless of wherever bowl game you end up, because whether it's Memphis or Orlando, or it doesn't really matter. Wherever you end up, if I'm Brees Hall, this is the last game that I play as a Cyclone, because whatever bowl game that is, I don't want to risk like what happened to Bijan Robinson in the Kansas game. I don't want to risk that happening to prevent me from being a first couple round draft pick. If I'm Charlie, it's the same thing. Like this might be the last time that we get to see at all, period, these guys play in a Cyclone uniform, even including the bowl game. I bet Brock goes out and plays again, but there's going to be a couple guys, and depending on what and they're going to have that conversation with Matt Campbell. Like I don't want Brees to play. Like if for the bowl game, I don't want him to suit up because I want him to be, you know, like David, like go play in the league, dude, go get your money, go make the university proud or your football program proud. Go do your thing. Don't hurt yourself doing something crazy in a bowl game that really ultimately doesn't matter. Think of what our expectations were 5 years ago. You know, like what are you expecting the season to be? Is you want to be competitive against Oklahoma and like you can hope that you can pick off Kansas State, maybe, you know, get to 6, maybe 7 if you're having a really, really good year. We're really disappointed with a 6-7 win season. And we're really disappointed with that. And that's because of this group. That's the only reason that the expectations have changed is the work that these guys have put in to completely upturn a program that we all knew could become a thing that it is now. It just had never been until these guys did it. So my in-laws are out of town and they've got season tickets. And so Aaron and I are actually taking tickets and I'm going to sit in the crowd because you can't applaud in the press box. So I'm going to sit in the crowd and we're going to get in there, you know, 30, 40 minutes early to give the full throated applause to everybody on this senior roster is getting recognized on senior day, because this is probably the most deserving group of seniors that Iowa State has had potentially ever.
I have no doubt that it will be a full stadium. I mean, Iowa State fans show up regardless of what's going on. Like, I have no doubt that it'll be packed house and there'll be 61-5 there strong. Everybody get to their seats early. Like, get there in time to see this, because the ovation that, like, Brock Purdy is going to get, obviously Breece probably won't go through senior day, you know, but get there when, so that when Breece's name is called in starting lineups, like, you can show him the appreciation that he deserves for what he did at Iowa State. The kid damn near is going to be the all-time leading rusher, which is a record that before Breece Hall showed up, I would have thought was more or less unbreakable, you know?
Yeah. Troy's okay. He's an okay runner.
And for him to have nearly done it in 3 years, I know that Troy did it in two, but you got to think about how college football has changed and the fact that Breece nearly did it while playing simultaneously his entire career with the program's all-time leading passer, in the all-time leader in every passing statistic and a couple of the all-time leaders in receiving statistics as well for the majority of his career. And Breece still did that. Like, people need to show up and show him the appreciation, but I can't even imagine the ovation that Brock is going to get, that Charlie will get,
Chase.
Greg Eisworth, Mike Rose, like, man, these guys are just, it will be really weird to think about Iowa State football without those guys, you know? And
it's also going to, it's interesting to think that it's possible for Iowa State football to be without those guys.
Yeah. It's just like, that's why I said it's just weird. You know, it's weird to think about an Iowa State football that doesn't have those guys in it, because they have become so synonymous with it. Brock is synonymous with Iowa State football now, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like I said with basketball. George Niang is synonymous with Iowa State basketball. Monte Morris, you think of Iowa State basketball. Fred Hoiberg, synonymous with Iowa State basketball. And, like, that's what these guys are now. And it has been a long time since Iowa State's had not just, like, a group of those guys, but I don't know if there's ever been a bunch of them at one time. You know, you obviously had Seneca and you had Troy Davis and you had Joel and Allen. Like, those are the kind of guys that I would throw into that same category. But other than that, like, yeah, you've had some really good players. AJ Klein, Jake Knott, like, those guys are probably in that category. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but these are the guys who transcend just being Iowa State good and are, like, nationally really, really good. And for us to have had all of these guys for the length of time that we have, like, we got really lucky, you know, to get to experience this and to, you know, it was fun for you and me, I think, to be part of it. In a sense, this is the first group that you and me have been doing this podcast for their entire career, you know, and we watched them. Shoot. I remember when Breece Hall committed and you and me doing a podcast talking about him and seeing what his highlight tape looked like and talking about the kind of kid that we thought that he could be. And it was like,
I was doing a recording of this podcast back when we would do it in the radio studio at 1460, and we did it in a radio studio. You and me were sitting in a room and Jay was on the phone, and Jay Jordan was like, this Mike Rose kid, he's the star of the class. And we're like, all right, fine, whatever.
He was like a two-star kid from Ohio that had, like, a Ball State offer. And Jay's like, this kid's going to be a star. And we're like, yeah, okay, man, whatever you say.
Turns out he was right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, like, they all lived up to be exactly what, I mean, they lived up to be more than I think what we ever could have hoped for them to be. Brock Purdy was more than what we ever could have hoped for him to be when he picked between Alabama and Texas A&M and Iowa State, you know? And like, I just hope that people can come out and appreciate them, regardless of whatever frustrations you might have, regardless of what your disappointment level might be after this season. Like, it's just been really fun to get to watch these guys grow up and get to watch them succeed. A lot.
Yeah. And I am excited. I don't know. The thing that's interesting, and I text you this, and this is not to say that it's a bad thing, but, like, being able to move on from this is gonna, like, you need to have closure on this season, you know, on this group of people. It's like, in order to feel comfortable being like, all right, well, turn the page now. Like, the next group is gonna, the Hunter Deckers and Eli Sanders and the Zach Peterson era, that era is starting come January. It's not quite yet, but you need to have that, like, close the book, you know, like, you officially hug your dad before you go off to college, like, that kind of thing. You don't just leave in the middle of the night. So you have to have that kind of, that moment to say, like, all right, thank you for this. You have done everything you have to get Iowa State to this point. you have done things that would appreciate you. And now you're going to go do your thing, always still be a part of the university. And Iowa State's going to go do their thing, always still a part of the university. But that kind of like closure point is necessary. And then it's going to be exciting to look forward now, you know, like you're losing a bunch of these guys. Of course, it's going to be really hard to replace Ennio Wasarike. That dude is a stud and has played every position on the defensive line. But at the same time, J.R. Singleton's not a bad player. You got good guys that are going to be coming in. Zach Peterson has more pass rush moves now than he did even at the start of the season. Like, he is a better player now than he was at the start of the season, in no small part because of Will McDonald and Ennie. And so you have all of this kind of what's going to happen next, but you're excited because there are talented players that are going to be coming next. And again, all of that comes down to the fact that this group has taken it to a place that Iowa State, if you get an Iowa State offer now, if you're a four-star, five, three, whatever, you get an Iowa State offer, it's not one you toss into the Buffalo category. You know, it's not, well, I got a Kansas offer, but I also got a, I don't know, Toledo offer. Those are about the same. It's now, oh shoot, I got an Iowa State offer and I got a Florida offer and I got a whatever, fill in the blank. Like, those are some choices now, because I know what I can become when I go to Iowa State because of what these guys have become when they go to Iowa State. So they have set the program on a track that is different than this program has ever been on before.
And it's almost like a TV show when you get to the series finale, you know, and you just know that everybody's going to leave. And it's like, you've spent years of your life watching these people on TV and then they're just going to be gone. You know, mm-hmm. It's just over. And like, that's just, I hope people will show up and enjoy that. All right. You got anything else you want to say before we let people go, or before we go?
No, I think, again, just, I would just reiterate the fact, I think usually the senior ceremony takes place,
it's like 15 minutes before.
Yeah. 10, 15 minutes before the game actually starts. Just be there in enough time for that. It's a 3:30 kick. So you have plenty of time to kind of tailgate, have fun, still get in there with sunlight, because it can kind of get dark by the end of the first quarter, but get in there at 3:15 and just in enough time to kind of give the due to these guys. And I think by proxy to the coaching staff, again, it's a disappointing season. It's not exactly what you want. Everybody, players, coaches, administration, fans, they all wanted the outcome of the games to be more, but what got them here and the players that are there and what they're going to do in the future and what the Iowa State's going to do in the future is all set up because of the work that they've put in. So yeah, just get there at 3:15 to kind of, again, give the thank you, to hug your dad before you go to college. Like, that kind of experience is really what you're going to be getting into. So, I don't know. I think we've done it before where you get the little decibel meter. Who do you think is going to get the highest on the decibel meter?
Oh, Brock. For sure. Maybe, yeah, I think
the only contribution. Or Charlie.
Yeah. I think maybe it'll be Brock, though. If I'm Iowa State, I would do Brock last. Have him go last in the line. Because I feel like that's that kid was special, man. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, special kid. Special player. Special quarterback. And it's going to be sad. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to another episode of Football and Random Things. We will be back next week. We'll recap the game against TCU and the entire season and look ahead to a bowl game. We'll have a great week. We'll talk soon. Peace.